weeping mothers, the lost fathers, and the forsaken children, and let them come quickly, for a voice of crying is heard out of Zion. For we are greatly confused, for death has come into our ghettos to cut off the young men and women from the streets of Philadelphia, New York, L.A., Georgia, Ohio, Florida, Mississippi, and throughout America, South America, the Caribbean islands, Africa, Asia, and all over the world. So return unto me, thus saith Yah, and I will return unto you, O my people.
Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all thy getting, get an understanding. Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com. That's timeforanawakening.com and listen to the live stream from the home page. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and listen to the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. That's ourradionetwork.com, broadcasting out of the Black Belt and listen to the live stream at that location. That's ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. Internet TuneIn search engine. Just type in Time for an Awakening. There you see the icon, and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the auxiliary connection. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening has a fan page on Facebook. And that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily. And before you leave that page, do me a favor and hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program at the fan page on Facebook, and Time for an Awakening Media. The homepage is there also. It should be one of your favorites. If not, do me a favor, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. It'll take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media, where you'll see more interesting content, also blogs, podcasts of the programs, the different programs we have that you can download, listen at later times, or even share with your friends. So again, make that one of your favorites and put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, we're in open form. It's Friday in the city of Philadelphia, Friday evening, and we're in a freestyle Friday, so to speak. Anything on your mind, we'll talk about it. You can give us a call, and we'll do that at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts,
check out my new house because I'm
at timeforanawakening.com.
Oh, that's a not you. She also wanted your house, but you use Realtor.com, so you found it.
All Insurance Incorporated is an American-owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services. Representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not where you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072, spelled new as in numerous, on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been, what they have been, where they are, and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. The day has been really, really engaging, informative, I may say.
Oh, yeah? Well, share with the listening audience some of the things going on.
Well, I want to come back to this, but I wanted to come back to the point about today. What started yesterday, they had a two-day symposium on reparations at the University of Pennsylvania Law School,
okay,
which was titled Reparations Now. But I want to come back to that because I thought that was really interesting.
Before you do that, you went down?
Yes. Good. I was able to steal myself away for a few hours in order to get down there. You know, I had to do the underground thing, but I actually was able to get to hear the afternoon session, which was, you know, again, powerful. But for the listening audience, the University of Penn Law School did stream it. So I don't know exactly how you can do it, but if you go to the University of Penn Law School and then put in Reparations Now, you'll probably be able to watch the full day symposium, which was it dealt with reparations in a broad sense. But if I can, I'd like to come back to that because I want to continue to let the listening audience know that in Philadelphia for this year of 2018, that the Du Bois conference, the year of Du Bois will be going on. So it'll be a host of symposiums and workshops, book readings that'll be dealing, you know, from February all the way up through to December on different aspects of dealing with Du Bois for his 150th birthday. So that was, I just wanted to make sure, you know, the listening audience, for those who are in the area, they can be able to come by and engage in, you know, one of the seminal scholars. And I know that there's people that have challenges with him, possibly at different stages in his life. But Du Bois did leave a body of work and, I say, an intellectual property, which is the science of sociology, which he was the one that gave that to the academy, if you might say. And the other thing is that the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilization is having their national conference in March, from March 15th to March 18th, at Community College. So I just want, for those who want to be immersed in the individuals who are really on the front line of developing African, continuing to develop the African understanding of our ancient historical knowledge base, should come to Philadelphia and partake in that ASCAP, Association for the Study of Classical African Civilization, a yearly conference. And that is, again, March 15th through March 18th of this year. So those are the things that I wanted to, you know, wanted us for Time for Awakening to, you know, kind of support and let people know that that'll be going on, and for those that come in.
You know, when you spoke about Du Bois and his life, and you mentioned about some people might have challenges with some of the things that he did, because his life did go full circle. You know, I think personally that some of our people will have issues with a lot of things that a lot of our people did here, struggling in since we've been over here in these shores of the United States. But the thing that really needs to be put in perspective, I think all of these men's lives, especially if they've been involved deeply in the struggle, it needs to be put on the table as far as a strategy to move forward. And I always go back to that saying that, you know, that's played in the beginning of the show by John Henry Clark, about history as a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. All of those things give us a map to what we need to be doing moving forward. And we can take segments from all of those men's lives and put it together. Because, you know, you could see early on that WB had challenges with Booker T. After Booker Washington passed, he had challenges with Marcus Garvey. And this was early on.
Right.
So I think that segments of all of those men's lives, Booker Washington, W.E.B. Du Bois, and definitely Marcus Garvey, needs to be taken and utilized now, along with other people, men and women, that's been involved in our struggle and that have went on to their ancestors. All of those things need to be put in perspectives, in think tanks in all of these cities, to map a strategy on what we need to do moving forward. Because it's clear that it's clear that we need a roadmap in building. We already have the building blocks, but we need a blueprint, so to speak, on how we're going to put these blocks together and what we're going to utilize and what we're going to put to the side. Because some of the things, and just my perspective, some of the things that the men tried to do or tried to utilize, we can't use them now. Or they're not apropos now, or they might not fit. But some of the other things the men tried to do and utilize can definitely be used now.
Right.
And that's where, you know, thinking people, both black men and women, need to come to the table and put these ideas out there. Talk about strategies. Pick one or two and spend some time to develop them and see what happens. You know, usually when we... you know, I've been involved in meetings, and you've been involved in countless meetings, Richard, where somebody might have an idea, and then you might have either strong leadership or a strong leader in a particular meeting that want to push his agenda. And, you know, people end up saying, well, I'm going to take my ball and go home.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that mindset now, that's a childish mind. We don't need that, because when you take your ball and go home, then the people that it hurts is your children, yourself, our people. We need these ideas. And people that have strong opinions or form groups or whatever, they need to understand that everybody has to contribute to this. You might have an idea that people agree with, but then it might be other ideas. That's where you come up with a strategy. Listen, we're going to take the top three ideas, spend some time on each of them. See what, after a period of time, have an evaluation. How does things look after we use Richard's philosophy for 6 months, 8 months, a year? How do things look after we use Sister So-and-So's? And then people can say, you know what, after working on this for a while, I think that Richard's strategy is the best one to move forward on. I think that Sister So-and-So's is the best one to move forward on, and approach it that way. That's just my suggestion, because the way that we have been doing things, and especially here, you know, in different meetings, and I'm going to use City of Philadelphia, for example. A lot of these local meetings, and you get two or three strong opinions, or a person might have convened a group, and he figured it's my group, it's my way or the highway. That type of stuff ain't going to work, man, and it don't work.
Well, they think it's a competition trying to rouse each other's group to their side. So it becomes more like a battle compared to trying to define what is the best strategy. It becomes more like some kind of ego driven drive to be the head person in charge, instead of what's the best way to achieve the outcome, you know. And, you know, Elliot, that's why it's, you know, and what you laid out, why we need to have organizational, institutional structure where these different philosophies and opinions can come together and be able to hash it out. And to me, that becomes where our politics play in. You know, sometimes I get the impression that we think that our politics only is involved when we go and sit in the political machinery.
Exactly.
They lay out. I mean, they negotiating, bargaining, arguing, fighting, but they're there. They stay within that structure because they're working towards the same end. But that's politics, you know. And that's what we have to understand. That's our politics, to where we have to stay and negotiate, argue, battle out, determine, as you say, what's the correct strategy, because we should be all looking to achieve the same end.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because usually when you mention the subject of politics, and you don't put it into perspective, immediately some of our people's minds goes towards this Democrat Republican type of shenanigans.
Right.
And a lot of times when we mention politics on this program, we're not talking about that. We're talking about developing strategies among ourselves and how we're going to approach problems that we face moving forward. That's the politics of any issue. Mm-hmm. Developing strategies to move forward.
And that's where that sovereign thinking and sovereignty comes in, because as individuals, you have to come to the table thinking that we're operating as a sovereign individual, which operating as a sovereign people.
Yeah, well, go ahead, Richard. Said you wanted to go back.
I got caught up in the reparation piece. And the reason why I thought it was really good, the law students put it on. And Elliot, now here, you know University of Penn is the bastion of white supremacy.
Get over that. Almost from the beginnings of this country. Yeah. But go ahead.
Yeah. And I couldn't, as I was sitting there, you know, and I was listening to the panelists, Brother Ori from Philadelphia, who is a regional representative for ENCOBRA, was one of the speakers. A sister that was there, Sister Green Thomas, who was a part of the descendants of the families from, you know, Georgetown, is, you know, the descendants of families are trying to get the Georgetown to recognize and to repair in relationship to them, Georgetown providing selling enslaved Africans to be able to maintain that institution, which I wasn't clear that I wasn't clear until listening that how much a Catholic institution Georgetown is.
Okay.
You know, and as a university, and how the families are of these descendants, which they can trace their family back. I mean, through the records, because the Catholic system does very good documentation. So she, you know, she was another one of the presenters that was, I thought was really informative. They didn't just have, ones who were part of NCOBRA, the national organization, or someone who was placing claims to an institution. They also had Native American representatives who are placing reparation claims. And also, which I didn't get to see, but I got to hear through the live streaming, that there was a claim in Chicago based off of the police abuse that was done, that they, through the city of Chicago, they was able to get the police department to, they placed a claim against the police department and called it a reparations claim for the abuse that they had done. That was a kind of a torturing of people through utilizing the police department, which was a new piece to me that went on. And they also had, we had Brother Cam on in dealing with the H.R. 42 and also the Caribbean, you know, with the Caribbean, what's that, the CARICOM?
Mm-hmm.
They had a sister, Vernie Shepherd, who was a part of the, you know, the Caribbean contingent and educational that's pushing the CARICOM, assisting and pushing and developing the CARICOM claim for reparations. So it was a fully developed information, education, and trying to wrestle with what you were saying about brainstorming and thinking through strategies to deal with how do you utilize the law to get this claim of reparations. And the guest speaker, the final speaker, was the sister of Katicha Tenefa, who is a part of she's an advocate for the Director of Criminal Justice and Open Society, but she's also working with Brother Cam, and I'm trying to think of the brother, Ron Daniels.
Okay.
In the 21st century. She's been working with them. In fact, she's been involved with the reparations issue since 75. And she developed the claim for African Americans, why African Americans have a claim for reparations. So this, the 2 days, and they did it through art. They had a multimedia movie presentation of people, the Native Americans. They dealt with the environmental justice issue as a means of dealing with reparations. So I would suggest to our listening audience that they go to maybe Google University of Penn Law School and Reparation Now and see if they can pull up that symposium. From what I understand, it will be staying up on their site. So it's something that for those of us that would be interested in staying informed about reparations in general and how it's being played out and how we need to look at it in specific on what you can do. But, you know, Ellie, you know, we talked about this earlier today about the status of H.R. 40, you know, mm-hmm. In relationship. Now, I might be a little confused. Maybe you can did Brother Cam say that it needed 100 co-signers to get it out of in committee, or that was what and COBRA was pushing for to get a 100 signers, cosigners to get it in committee.
No, it needed 100 to get it, you know, to the floor, you know, for right. out of the committee to the floor. It needed 100, you know, to do it.
Right. And, that's what I thought it was, that it needed, that he said it needed 100. And we, you know, and I think, when we looked at it, it was like still at like around 32 members who have signed it.
Yeah, not even the whole Black Caucus so have signed it.
Right. And of that 32, it's some that are white. It wasn't a total Black Caucus that mm-hmm. were, have been involved. And the reason I brought that up, because another bill that is, that started last year, matter of fact, in February of 17, there was a House bill that was pushed for the to commemorate and document that which was supposed to go through the year of 2019, 400 years since the how do you say? Do you say landing, or do you say people of African ancestry wound up and in Virginia, and point. Yeah, I'm looking for the doc. Looking for the a specific location.
Well, they say Jamestown.
Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Point Comfort, Virginia. So now that's H.R. 1242. That and within the since that February, by January 8th, 2018, 45 signed that a commission and a series of activities would be done to. And let me, if you don't mind me. Reading this, according to the bill's sponsors, the history of Virginia and our nation cannot be fully understood or appreciated without knowing about the first Africans who arrived at Point Comfort, Virginia in 1619. The commission established by this bill will be charged with the important task of planning, developing, and implementing a series of programs and activities throughout 2019 that fully tells the story of African Americans, their contributions to the fabric of our nation, and the resilience over the last 400 years. Now, that I just thought was another interesting. Here we have H.R. 40-2 placed and still looking for it after 25 years. Still looking for it to be brought to the floor. But we have another bill which we can utilize and celebrate to tell our story or utilize to make our case that's been brought up. It was brought up in committee, was introduced by Bobby Smith, a Democrat from Virginia. And you had a lot of the members of the Congressional Black Caucus, the NAACP, and a year later, the bill is passed. I'm going to try not to make no comparison. I'm going to try not to make any judgment, but I just thought it was interesting. But I think it's important that we are aware that this 400-year of African-American History Commission Act, which is H.R. 1242, is brought up.
Now, wait a minute, Richard. This was proposed. It got enough signers to be mm-hmm. brought before and passed.
Right. Right.
But what exactly is this? Where's the teeth in what they're proposing?
Well, they say that the cost would be $6 million. Well, that it is passed.
The cost of what?
To actually make this happen. I think it's going to be done through the Park Service, but also anybody can, I guess, who has, wants to, as it says, wants to create programs that deal with that celebration or acknowledgement of African Americans in our country, in this country, they can be able to put a program in, I guess, submit it.
And get some money.
And get funded through the year, up to 2019.
But that, so, I mean, but that's, and basically what I'm saying is that's my whole point. There's no teeth in that. That what right. they're proposing is being done already all the time by concerned right. black people with no money. So, you know, H.R. 40 is something with some teeth in it that'll go to the heart of the creation of this country. And they don't want to do that.
Right.
They don't want to talk about that.
Right.
White folks have always been in denial. So, no, I was just throwing it out there in comparison to H.R. 40 and this other bill that you said kind of flew through and got approval.
I got approval, right. And that's the thing initially that struck me when I became aware of it. As you say, it's kind of like what we call the famous first. You know how they always, you know, we just went through Martin Luther King's, you know, birthday, mm-hmm. or, you know, it's individuals, right? Or like Black History Month is going to be coming up and you'll hear some people will be continue the same people, Rosa Parks, you know, Frederick Douglass, Harriet Tubman, and these ancestors are important in the narrative of how Africans have either celebrated ourselves, dealt with the resistance against this American nation state, and maintained the moral imperative of what a good, what's a just society. But it doesn't, not dealing with that we have been harmed and need to be repaired or redressed in relationship to reparation. And as you said, they don't even want to touch that. But, you know, Elliot, and this is the question, is it the political operatives, the black political operatives at first? I can understand American, the European, I can understand them not wanting to, for a lot of reasons, deal with repairing Africans. But utilizing the political machinery, the question comes, why is the political operatives, when you look at H.R. 40, why are they not supporting it? And or is it because African-Americans are not wanting to push for reparations? Is the reason why that this H.R. 40 and the new version of H.R. 40 has not been placed on the floor to debate?
Well, listen, I think it's a combination of both. And I think the responsibility, more of it, lies on the misleadership class to take a page from the Black Agenda Report. They know, because the average people and some of our folks in our community, the average public, they might not even be aware of H.R. 40. They know that we've had issues here from the beginning, since we've been here, dealing with Europeans. But they might not even be aware that it's been a bill that can't get support, that's been floundering for a number of years, not even being able to be pushed to the floor because of black lawmakers has been dragging their feet. And everybody else's agenda gets them to sign on, whether it's Jewish. We have Cynthia McKinney on, say they got to sign a letter saying that they're going to vote for anything that the Jews put out there, that they're going to support it. So anything, a gay or lesbian come up with some issue, here comes black folks out there speaking on it, ready to sign it. any issues coming up, any issue the Democratic Party want to push forward, they'll sign it. Stuff that hurt their own community, with the militarizing these police and everything else, the Black Caucus signed on it. All these other issues, and some of them hurt directly our community. That crime bill, they signed it. They pushed it. In fact, when people started screaming about some of these white lawmakers, including the Clintons, that actively pushed that bill out there, they turned around and flipped the script and said, well, black folks, you know, these black lawmakers pushed us to sign it. So they're aware of these things. But they don't put, and it's all about fear, man. And not only fear, I think they're complacent in what they're doing. They really want to be accepted by white folks. They really want our people to assimilate. They're tired of all this resistance. I'm talking about some of these black leaders. They act like they want to resist, but they really don't. They're tired of our people resisting. They want you to just be complacent, be accepting, and just assimilate. I think that's what it's all about. That's my personal opinion, and I hope I'm wrong.
Well, I'm gonna go down the line that I'm trying to grapple with this since 72, that that generation of black leadership, and that would be Jesse and them, right? It moved away from representing the community, the constituency they came out of, to representing themselves. And that the next generation, you know, when we look at the Cory Bookers and all of them, they definitely are, look at the number of mayors and people we have in city council, the ones that are sitting in commissions. I mean, look at the stories we heard. I mean, was that Detroit? No, Flint, St. Louis, where the population of the city is like 60-70% black. The city council is black, but the police abuse was rampant. Even taking money from black people on trumped up charges. They could not be looking out for the citizens of that area that put them in, because you know white people ain't put them in.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly.
And you can't say they didn't know that these kind of abuses were going on. So there's a level of complicity as as individuals. And I come down the line that, you know, not even as a class group. They were, you know, but just as their own individual. And there was able to manipulate a certain amount of black participation, because, you know, you see black participation is not high because people feel, disconnected from the political, from the use of what they believe that the political process can do for them. So I think that group of elected officials sows the seed of disenchantment to the voting class, black people in general, and in doing that, they personally can benefit, and they ain't got nobody watching them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And they got the support of the party, like, only go out there. I mean, was it when Brother Cam told us that, Nancy Pelosi told them not to push that H.R. 40 at that time because, it might hurt Hillary's run for the presidency?
Yeah, but I don't think that she really had to tell them don't push it, because I don't think they was going to do it anyway.
You said they'll do it on their own?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a dynamics. And now, you know, you notice every time that when they had these, especially after the unfortunate police killings, deliberate killings, they jump in front of when you have the what you said, what you call the direct action, you know, and then they jump in front of the camera and, you know, want to give their, like, calm the people. This is what we want. You know, when either when people get fed up emotionally, their emotion get high, and then they there go again. They become the, I don't know if it's the buffer.
Oh yeah, that's definitely what it is, because that's when they really have to start doing their job. That's when this power structure, this white supremacist power structure, really requires them to do their job. The clergy, a lot of times in a lot of these cities, definitely the black leadership, or deemed as leadership, are supposed to come out when the people get fed up. And white folks know that black folks are going to get fed up. They act like they're surprised. They know clearly what it is. You know, you shared with me those words of Johnson when he addressed Howard University in, I think it was 66?
64.
Okay.
64? Yeah, 64.
When he addressed Howard University about
65, I believe.
Yeah, about the our people's situation at that time, and it's no different now.
Oh man!
But the thing that really makes you scratch your head, and it goes toward one of our callers that calls from Memphis, Brother Marcus. One thing he always says that what does he say? It takes up. It, what does he say? 400 years is long enough to know. See, you know, our people seem to be under the illusion that these folks don't understand. You got to make them understand about race. Make them understand. They understand clearly what they've been doing, what they continue to do, and the damage that has done to black people. But they don't intend to change. They intend to do. They intend to do window dressing. But they don't really intend to really change their approach. When they figure that you're starting to get a little wise to what they're doing, then they change their methods. They try to hide it a little more. But, you know, I'm a, and callers can get involved too in this conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. And you don't have to bring this up. You can bring anything you want up. This is an open forum. But we're just throwing around some issues. I want to play that now. It's an older speech, so it's not in stereo. So it's a mono speech. So I'm going to try to, I think it'll be clear and audible. But I want the listening audience to hear what Johnson is saying in reference to the black situation in this country and the obligation that he feels that Europeans ought to take for it. Now, keep in mind that Johnson was no friend to the black. Listen, he was the one that signed the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Bill. He was no friend to black people. He was a Dixiecrat and a racist. He used the N-word more than Mark Furman. I'll take something from the O.J. trial. He used the N-word more than Mark Furman. He wasn't no friend to black people. So if he understands clearly what the issues was, these folks, including Trump, you know, our people are all shocked. Trump makes stupid statement after stupid statement and racist statement after racist statement, and they figure that stuff never came from the White House. When we shared a couple of weeks ago some of the comments made by other presidents. But I want to play this clip that you shared with me, Richard, that Johnson made at our university in reference to our problem, our situation that was forced on us. But listen to how he explains it and listen to what he says in reference to it. And this is for our listening audience. Let me see if I can cue this up and get it, because I said the recording is from that from 65, so it's recorded in mono. But try to get it up so people can at least understand it. Let me pull this up.
There is a second cause, much more difficult to explain, more deeply grounded, more desperate in its force. And it is the devastating heritage of long years of slavery,
in a century of oppression and hatred.
Can you hear that, Richard?
And injustice.
Yes, good.
While Negro poverty is not white poverty, many of its causes and many of its cures are the same. But there are differences. Deep, corrosive, obstinate differences, radiating painful roots into the community and into the family and the nature of the individual. These differences are not racial differences. They are solely and simply the consequence of ancient brutality, past injustice, and present prejudice. They are anguishing to observe. For the Negro, they are a constant reminder of oppression. For the white, they are a constant reminder of guilt. But they must be faced, and they must be dealt with, and they must be overcome. If we are able to reach the time when the only difference between Negroes and whites is the color of their skin. Nor can we find a complete answer in the experience of other American minorities. They made a valiant and a largely successful effort to emerge from poverty and prejudice. The Negro, like these others, will have to rely mostly on his own efforts. But he just cannot do it alone. For they did not have the heritage of centuries to overcome. And they did not have a cultural tradition which had been twisted and battered by endless years of hatred and hopelessness. Nor were they excluded, these others, because of race or color, a feeling whose dark intensity is matched by no other prejudice in our society. Nor can these differences be understood as isolated infirmities. They are a seamless web. They cause each other. They result from each other. They reinforce each other. Much of the Negro community is buried under a blanket of history and circumstance. It is not a lasting solution to lift just one corner of that blanket. We must stand on all sides, and we must raise the entire cover if we are to liberate our fellow citizens. One of the differences is the increased concentration of Negroes in our cities. More than 73% of all Negroes live in urban areas, compared with less than 70% of the whites. Most of these Negroes live in slums. Most of these Negroes live together, a separated people. And men are shaped by their world. When it is a world of decay, ringed by an invisible wall, when escape is arduous and uncertain, and the saving pressures of a more hopeful society are unknown, it can cripple the youth, and it can desolate the men. There is also the burden that a dark skin can add to the search for a productive place in our society. Unemployment strikes most swiftly and broadly at the Negro. And this burden erodes hope. Blighted hope breeds despair. Despair brings indifference to the learning which offers a way out. And despair coupled with indifference is often the source of destructive rebellion against the fabric of society. There is also the lacerating hurt of early collision with white hatred or prejudice, distaste or condescension. Other groups have felt similar intolerance. But success and achievement could wipe it away. They do not change the color of a man's skin. I have seen this uncomprehending pain in the eyes of the little young Mexican-American school children that I taught many years ago. But it can be overcome. But for many, the wounds are always open. Perhaps most important, influence radiating to every part of life is the breakdown of the Negro family structure. For this, most of all, white America must accept responsibility. It flows from centuries of oppression and persecution of the Negro man. It flows from the long years of degradation and discrimination which have attacked his dignity and assaulted his ability to produce for his family. This, too, is not pleasant to look upon. But it must be faced by those whose serious intent is to improve the life of all Americans. Only a minority, less than half, of all Negro children reach the age of 18, having lived all their lives with both of their parents. At this moment tonight,
now, I'm going to stop there, Richard. We'll take a break, but let me mention this before we do. I hope it was heard by our listening audience. You know, now, just as I mentioned before I played that segment, Johnson was similar to other presidents of this country. There was no friend of black people. Johnson was a Dixiecrat. Interracial. Texas senator. That took over, I think, after Kennedy was killed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, he mentioned several things during that speech. The Negro must rely on their own efforts. That they're buried under a blanket of circumstance that was created by white folks.
Mm.
What else did I mention? I kind of highlighted that that their history here was full of ancient brutality and past injustice. And two reminders, one of Negro oppression and the other one of white guilt. Mm-hmm. Why he was saying that these situations are not addressed. He mentioned about the despair that black people find themselves under, which leads to an indifference to learning. Did you catch that part?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
but see, what I'm saying is, Richard, they know why these things happen. They know why in these inner cities, a lot of these black children are dropping out of school. They know why. Black people are so scratching their head, thinking that they can come up with solutions and with concern whites going to come up with. They know why these situations, they created these situations. They're complicit in it. That Dixiecrat Johnson said the breakdown of the Negro family where men are attacked. He said the black youth are crippled and the men are desolate which led to the breakdown of the black family. This was in 1964 or 5 when he made this address. And he said the wife must accept the responsibility for that. Did you hear what he said that?
Yeah.
So they don't, you know, our people with this old crap, and you got to convince them, folks. You got to talk with them. They know what the situation is and what it has caused. What we need to do is rally around one another, come up with solutions to help our people and move our people forward. You want some help from these people. They created this situation. This man laid it out clearly in this little segment of the speech I played, 6-7 minutes. Not only the problems that our people face, who created them, why white folks don't want to talk about it, and the situation that it has caused. He basically laid it out.
Mm-hmm.
But he did say in there that the Negro has to rely on his own efforts.
Mm-hmm.
But he was saying white folks has responsibility to help them, but that ain't coming. That was just talk. The thing that we need to pay attention to is when he said that we need to rely on our own efforts. If this is going to change, we're going to have to do it. Let me take a break because we got some callers lined up. Let me take a few before we take a break. Let's go to 602 area code 602.
Yes, brother Elliot, I'm brother Richard. Good evening, brother Marcus.
Hey, sir. How you doing?
All right. You know, that old Lyndon B. Johnson, he was just a hypocrite. Because at the same time, he talking that yet, he was sending young black youth to Vietnam, dying by the thousands.
Yeah.
All right. Young youth pumping up a lot of Yankee doodle into them. Oh, see, you're fighting for your country, you know, and sending the black youth to die. These white folks, they're just hypocrites.
But you know what? Marcus, I don't want to cut you because I want you to finish your thought. But that's the reason I played that, because he was clear to what the problems were. He was crystal clear. He knew what it was. They know what this is.
Yeah, they created the problem.
They created the problem.
I didn't say, oh, look, you're in a mess. It's your fault.
It's your fault. Yeah.
Yeah.
But go ahead. I don't want to cut the question.
500 years is long enough to know. You know, if there was any human relationship to be worked out with these people, we could have done it within 500 years. They have no intention of working anything out with us. And then these black politicians that we have here, these, you know, Marcus Garvey called them bipolar psychological bastards. You see, they sell out our people, you see, and you see, the problem is too, you know, they have no fear of the, you know, of the black community. You see, they could do anything they want to do, and they ain't got to worry about them because, you know, black folk ain't going to do nothing. You see, so, you know, we got to change that, you know, these Negroes got to go, look, if you go in there and sell out, they're going to be some pay. They're going to be some pay back because, you see, that's why he's on them, you know, it's fear. The Negro, if you don't do what I do, I got something for you. So we got to have the same response to them. So look, if you go in there and you selling all sorts of people, there's going to be some payback for you, you know. So, you know, but it's just disgusting. You know, when you say that, you know, the HR 40, you know, the black folks, the human is dying on, you know, and seeing the political climate in the country right now, I mean, when he was speaking one down with Charles to see what the hell going on. You know, but they don't care. They're just thinking about themselves, me, myself, and I. You know, and it's selfish, it's self-centered, but as you say, we are the ones who are going to solve, you know, and I am confident that we don't need everybody. You know, we don't need everybody. We just need a few good people. It's because when you get everybody, you get a lot of confusion. You just need a subgroup to start to work together. And we take care of what is here to change the mentality. Anyway, you know, we keep on keeping on and I'll continue listening. Thank you, good brother.
Thank you for your call, brother Marcus.
All right.
Let's see if we can grab one more before we take a break here. Let's go to Newport News. Newport News?
Oh, no, man. Go right ahead. I'm listening. I'm enjoying it.
Okay. All right. We'll We'll take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll continue the conversation. You can get involved, too, by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Listen, before we leave, Richard, for break, let me do something. Because, you know, we talked last program, and, you know, the conversation was basically 45's remarks in reference to the shithole remarks. It was an article in the Associated Press about what Ghana called for through the African Union in reference to his remarks. I want to read this article before we leave. And, you know, this can go in topic of conversation or people can talk about what they want when they call. But let me read this because it kind of, if you listen to the remarks, I mean, the comments by some of the African countries, it clearly shows you the problem. And it's an international problem. When I say international, it deals with our people here in the diaspora, and it deals with the continent. Let me read this. Associated Press. Ghana lawmaker calls for boycott of U.S. by developing countries in wake of Trump's shithole country remark or comment. Excuse me. It says Johannesburg. Associated Press. Africans are shocked on Friday to find Donald Trump had finally taken an interest in their continent, but it wasn't what people had hoped for. Using vulgar language, Trump on Thursday questioned why the U.S. would accept more immigrants from Haiti and shithole countries in Africa, rather than places like Norway, in rejecting a bipartisan immigration deal. On Friday, he denied using that language. The African Union continental body told the Associated Press it was frankly alarmed by Trump's comments. Given the historical reality of how many Africans arrived in the United States as slaves, this statement flies in the face of all accepted behavior and practices. African Union spokeswoman Iba Kalando said, some African governments found themselves in an awkward position. As top recipients of U.S. aid, some hesitated to jeopardize it by criticizing Trump, especially as his administration sought to slash foreign assistance. Unless it was specifically said about South Sudan, we have nothing to say about it, South Sudan government spokesman Akende Wek Aten told the AP. But Botswana government called Trump's comments reprehensible and racist, saying the U.S. ambassador had been summoned to clarify whether the country was regarded so poorly after years of cordial relations. South Africa's ruling African National Congress called Trump's comments vehemently offensive, while opposition leader Mamusa Maambi said the hatred of Obama's roots now extends to the entire continent. Uganda State Minister for International Relations Henry Oyemi called the remarks unfortunate and regrettable and hoped that heads of state will reply at an African Union summit later this month. African media outlets and the continent's youth, increasingly connected populations, were not shy, with some tweetings, sleek photos of African landscapes and urban areas with hashtags of the word. Well, this is a perfect definition of racism. That's all I have to say, says Kenya entrepreneur Wangio Magiri, told the AP in response to Trump. Trump's comments were shockingly shameful, and I'm sorry, but there's no other word that can be used but racist, says the spokesman for the UN Human Rights Office, Rupert Colville. Many of the world's second most populous continent reached out for their smartphones, long practicing in defining it from the easy stereotypes. While 40% of the world's poor live in sub-Saharan Africa, according to the International Monetary Fund, the region has also billionaires. Reality shows us a growing middle class. The World Bank on Friday tweeted that sub-Saharan Africa's economic growth this year is forecasted at 3.2%. That was the U.S. economy annual growth for July through September, according to the Commerce Department's data last month. Some in Africa decided to own Trump's vulgar comments or throw it back in his face. A good morning from the greatest, most beautiful shithole in the world, says South African Broadcasting Corporation anchor Leanne Masai tweeted. As someone from South Shithole, Trevor is deeply offended by the president's remarks, the Daily Show tweeted at his South African-born host, Trevor Noah. Others said that Trump's at a point, in a way. Trump is absolutely right, says Mambi Toure, a 30-year-old sociologist in Guinea. When you have heads of state that mess with the Constitution to perpetrate their own power, when you have rebel factions that kill children, disembowel women as saints, and mutilate innocent civilians, then it is a shithole. In Kenya, East Africa's economic hub, political activist Boniface Magia pleaded, please don't confuse the leaders of Africa's elect with our beautiful continent. We later told the AP that Africa gave America the greatest president ever in Barack Obama. It is actually a disgrace for one of the best men to occupy that office to be succeeded by an idiot. The U.S. president is not only hurting himself both at home and abroad, some Africans said. He's not only insulted Africans, but he's also insulted African Americans, says Sylvester Oyande Akende, associate professor of international relations at Lagos State University in Nigeria. Internationally, such language will deepen the isolation of the United States as a country that is already losing global prestige. One lawmaker in Ghana called for a boycott by developing countries against the United States until Trump leaves office. The sooner he is made aware that America needs the world and the world needs America, the better it is for all of us, says Raz Mubarak. An outrage spread. The U.S. government's own African media hub tried to put out the flames. Without directly referring to Trump's statement, it tweeted that the U.S. remains committed to working together with Africa to realize the promise of a more peaceful and productive and more prosperous 21st century Africa. U.S. deeply regrets the people of Africa's insult and values its partnership with them. Richard, you've seen some of the comments of some of the African countries, some of them agreeing with Trump's remarks. The South Sudan issued a statement through the African Union, and let me read it again. It says, hold on one second here. It says here, the South Sudan's ruling African National Congress called Trump's comments, oh, wait a minute, hold on a second, this is not it. It says, unless he specifically said the South Sudan, we have nothing to say about it, says South Sudan government spokesman Atende Wick Atihan, totally AP. So, you know, just like I said before, that same sickness that is prevalent here among some of our people is prevalent on the mother continent. Unless he directly said anything from his country, he don't have anything to do with it and nothing to say. He don't realize that his remarks spread to, just like the brother from Nigeria said, his remarks insult both Africans and African Americans. So he was this man was looking at everything in perspective. This other brother looking at stuff personally. If he don't say us directly, then I don't have nothing to do with it. I don't have no comment. That's the problem in a nutshell. So when you're talking about politicians here, black leadership, or black leadership on the continent, that in itself is the problem.
It has a historical basis, too.
Yeah, we're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we've got two callers on hold. We'll go right to them. It's open phone lines. Anything on demand, drop us a line. Give us a call at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back.
To the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years. Located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services. Representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kanban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard this special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
Darkness no longer, a child is born. Mothers shed tears of joy as baby tests his lungs. But daddy's not there where he ought to be. Somewhere in Georgia, skinning and shooting craps on his knees. Another victim born out here in the hood. And based on statistics, it really ain't all good. Welfare takes the tab, and daddy can't sign, and it can't be seen, the family becomes a crime. The hunt is on, and brother, you're the prey, serving time in jail, it just ain't the way. I'm living so hard, babe, that my hair's gray. We got to make a change, It's a brand new day.
A new world order. A brand new day.
It's a new day.
A change of mind for the human race.
It's a new day.
A new world order. A brand new day. A change of mind for the human race.
Operation in flux. And it's on the way. We just marched a million plus the other day. Look, look, we all witnessed the sweat rolling down Miss Liberty's head. She knows the sleeping giant. She's no longer sleeping dead. Oh, what a fulfillment of prophecy. Let us teach the children freedom's never been free. It's okay to cry. Go ahead and cry. Jesus wept, but hope and faith be kept. It's a new day.
A world order, a brand new day.
It's a
change
new day.
Of mind for the human race.
It's a new world
order, a brand new day.
Welcome back.
It's
to Time for an Awakening. We're in an open forum, Freestyle Friday. You can give us a call if you want to be involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. And let's go to the phones. 267. 267, area code 267.
Yes, Brother Elliot.
Yes, sir.
How are you?
How are you, sir?
Is Richard over there?
I'm here.
What's up, your voice, sir? Good hearing your voice. I hear where the conversation is going. Very interesting. I have a friend of mine, and she's working on her master's degree in nursing at Temple University. And she's from West Africa, Ghana. And I had went to King's Day at Girard College, and they had a pretty good forum there. They had speakers there. They had job forum. An orchestra, and you have various organizations there doing what I call community service, giving out information, doing blood pressure, checking sugar. And I happened to meet her there, and I was saying that the public schools should be able to open up their borders for the ones that we still have left on those days. I think that the public schools or even the charter schools in our community should let the community invite the community in on that day. Or many days. So we should feel like we should be able to come in and out of those schools, especially on days like King and observing days of our people who are people of antiquity and greatness. But my point was, when I met this sister, she's working on her degree in nursing, and she said, Tim, I'm very upset about what Trump has said about the people from Africa and Haiti, and the people from different countries where it's black populated. And her thing was that, or as well as you know, Tim, that when we come over here from the continent in different countries where black people inhabit black people, we come over here, we don't play. And not only do we come over here and take our education serious, we do go back to the motherland in different places and try to build it and rebuild it. And like in reverse, she said that she's had the experience to see the African American over here in America work as hard and deal with a madman who has been able to come to power and push his racist agenda. And we had the conversation about Webb, William Edward Burgoyne Du Bois, and when he did his dissertation at Harvard on the African, the suppression of the African slave trade, and how Africa was depopulated and captives and put in bondage, chattel slavery. So our conversation went as far as for a man to not know his history, because this is the best study for all of our research, and not know that his ancestors cut up Africa, like Walter Rodney said, and raped it. And that his ancestors did what they did to the Native Americans over here in America. And for him to put us on equal footing, like these countries are places of defecation and scum, that's a man who is ignorant. And to talk about a continent or a place where we're from and not know his own history, that he was out of the cave, tells you he's an ignorant man and he needs to be straightened out. But we need to fight him on equal footage about making these nasty comments that he's been saying. It will be a year Saturday he's been in office. But I like to see what the opponents are of the Democratic Party. I want to see them toe the line and do a shutdown on the government. I want to see a shutdown. I want to see what kind of backbone the Democrats have, because the Republican Party pretend, put their heads down on their lap, act like they didn't say it. They changed their story about 100 times. Oh, I didn't hear anything. One person hears something. Nobody else in that room hears anything. And then one person, Lindsey Graham, said, I went and said what I said to Donald Trump. But what did you say to him? I mean, I'd like to see some backbone in the Democratic Party. And at the same time, I would like to hear backbone from Africans, backbone from people from Haiti, and backbone from America to shut this guy down and challenge him on his comments. If it is a freedom of speech, then we have the right to challenge him on his ignorance. I'd like to know your comments, brothers.
Well, I'll mention this and then Brother Richard chime in. When you say you'd like to see the Democratic Party challenge him, do you think it's a difference between the Democratic Party and what Trump is saying? I mean, is there any philosophical difference, really, in what he believes in the Democratic Party?
Well, I think if there are some whites who are sensitive to racism, and if the racism directed to black people, at that point, there is a challenge. Now, and at that point, they're representing the communities all across the United States. There's a large population of blacks in those states, in those cities. And if they represent their constituents, yes, on that level, yes, he deserves to be challenged. Yes, he deserves to be put in his place. No, he's not a good representative for the highest office in the land on that point.
Well, I mean, you don't see Democrats, especially white Democrats, really challenging his presidency as far as demanding an impeachment or even supporting articles of impeachment. Al Green was out there. They told him not to do anything in reference to it. But go ahead, Richard, if you want to say something in reference to it.
You know, it's hard for me. What I'm going to do is because, you know, Ellie and Brother Tim, when you played the Johnson, you know, speech at Howard.
Mm-hmm.
If people listen to the beginning of it, what he was saying to those at Howard were that they were basically different than the people he talked about later on, who are under this particular in this particular condition. That's one, and also. The writer for that speech was Daniel Patrick Moynihan. And remember, that year, Moynihan did that study, the Moynihan Report, which was dealt with the question about the Negro family. Why am I centering this in talking about Trump? And then how Trump, in his speech, is dealing with the African situation, because at that time, the choice that, you know, Johnson pulled out the Great Society, but I contend that, as you see with the Congress, they chose to take that money and put it into the military expansion of the war in Vietnam. They chose that.
Mm-hmm.
After, you know, right after that, that, you know, and he put that money into the Great Society, or was trying to get it to the Great Society, which would have dealt with the health, would have dealt with the education. That Congress and that military pushed for the, on one leg, for that to expand the war in Vietnam. Well, Trump in this here, what they call it, the this budgetary thing, which was supposed to be dealing with DACA, also in, you know, what those Congress and senators walked away with to expand this 1 month, instead of having the government shut down, they agreed, the Democrats agreed to, as a negotiating tool, to increase the military budget. That's one thing. And I'll just, you know, so the president get his DACA thing, but what do you think he wanted more, money for the wall or money for the military? I would say he wanted money for the military. And what those Republican conservatives wanted, money for the wall or money for the immigrants put out or money for the military? I would say they want the money for the military. And at the same time, in 65, again, that new international economic order was being put in place where those countries and of those countries of that the third and fourth world were demanding, and at that point the natural resource was oil, they were demanding more money for oil reserves, because remember by the time Carter came in, how they had a crisis. That was Gaddafi and them. And what the United States, using 10 years later, using Patrick Moynihan, Daniel Patrick Moynihan, who was the UN ambassador, who told those African and Asian countries that you are not going to hijack and tell, one, that that the Israeli Zionism is going to cow down to those, to your demands. So what I'm saying is, when you look at then and now, not only do you see the African countries, the African countries were trying to come up, but you also see that what they were trying to do was split them up too. And what you read, Elliot, is that split up, because you see that the different voices within the African heads of state is saying, some are saying, we need to, like, this guy is crazy. We don't need to pay him no attention. He's insulting us and the African diaspora. And others are saying, well, he ain't talking about us. Now, where do you think the AFCON is going to get his juice from in order to maintain its position on the continent? And you got Israel talking about, on one hand, they want to become a member of. I'm saying that there's a correlation. And locally, in North America, African Americans are having the same split. In the sense of, yeah, we say, oh, he talking bad, but then we also saying that watching the Democratic and Republican machine saying they're going to strip all the social services, and you don't hear no peep about that at all, really. In the budget that's being negotiated, that's going to shut down the government. So, for me, I think we should look at it in a broader thing and not about Trump, but the continuation of a strategic positioning of the American empire now trying to split up the African continent between those who are anti-America and those who are pro-America. And they're trying to split it up so that they can be able to, that 3% growth you're talking about, most investors looking at Africa is saying African economies are growing, and they are investing in it. And obviously, the American nation state saying it's something's there that they need to protect, or once again colonize, and that's why they got AFCON there. So I don't see any distinction between the two, and I don't see Trump as no big boogeyman.
I see your position. Clear. You opened up some things for me, Richard. I appreciate that.
You know, before you leave, Brother Tim, I just want to mention that
I think that's what has stymied some of our people here. Maybe over the past 20 years, is looking for some type of leadership or sage words of encouragement, or I don't know exactly what they're looking for out of this Democratic Party. But, you know, more and more we see that if we don't do something ourselves, develop political leadership ourselves. And when I say political leadership, again, I'm not necessarily talking about any Democrat or Republican shenanigans that we know about here. And so we start developing these mechanisms to move our people forward, then we should expect what we've been getting from both Democrats and Republicans is nothing. The runaround. The shell game.
Oh, so true, Elliot. So true. So true. So true. Because the Democrats and the Republicans have both failed us.
I mean, if you want to look at it as a failure, I think that they've did what they're supposed to do. Especially dealing with our people. It's come up with slick ways to act like they're helping you when they're really not. Or act like they're being fair when they're really not. And that takes work, man, to sit by and scheme and come up with ways to fool somebody. And you know, whether I'll use it on a layman's term or a street term, the three-card molly, a shell game. You know, when you think of all that stuff, that takes work. You don't just get out there and do that sleight of hands and think, you know, you got to do work so people can't pick up on it. So this guy is not, you know, it takes effort to do what he's doing. See, that's why our people don't need to be fooled into thinking that all we got to do is meet with this individual or that individual and show his insensitivity and how this is affecting other people and maybe he'll change. It don't work like that. They know exactly what they're doing.
Yes, they do. They plan.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you for your call, man.
Yes, sir. Stay strong. Keep up the good work.
Peace.
Take care, man.
Let's go to 646. 646.
This is Reverend Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, how that cold going, Rich?
Say that again. It's
how
still
is that
green.
Cold going, Rich?
It's getting better. It's getting better.
Are you back with the daddy? Got you working hard, huh?
Hey. I ran away today.
Any chance you could get away from the daddy, you gotta jump on it, baby. You can't be giving your hard earned time and energy for the rest of your life.
He said he ran off the plantation today.
Yeah. Well, that's what we talking about. He knew he was going to speak to me tonight. So he had to do something, you know, revolutionary. You know what I mean? In his mind.
Hey, you see, I went to hear about reparations now.
But the Negro don't want, the Negro really don't want no reparations. Negro's scared of reparations. I mean, you know what's so funny, man, that I have to laugh, man, and I always get in trouble with you know, certain individuals when I start talking about them worthless Negroes that's in fraternities and sororities. You know, with all of the membership that they have and all of the so-called position they got in the Yoruba society, you would think they would support something like reparations, man, to put their daddy on blast. You know, I mean, the Jew do it. Every other group, they do it. They deal with it in accordance. You know what I'm saying? But we the only ones who basically never do nothing in the corner to threaten the Yoruba. We just go about trying to get along with this bastard as much as possible. It's amazing. We try not to do anything at all to upset him and to make him be annoyed with us. You know what I mean? And the more you think about it, the Democratic Party acts like Negroes. That's how they act like. They act just like Negroes. scared to really, really confront the enemy. Because I guess they really enjoy their position, and they know that they're part, I guess, of that enemy class, and that that enemy is basically going to keep them at a certain length, in a certain position, and, you know, if given the opportunity to have a little control and party, you know, power, then, you know, they'll just take it. But on the whole, they are some of the most worthless bastards in the world, the Democratic Party. But Negroes seem like just run to them. I mean, man, it's absolutely ridiculous when you think about it. What did the Democratic Party give black folks in return for our so-called loyalty and love? I can't think of anything.
Ask Donna Brazil.
Huh?
Ask Donna Brazil. It was nothing.
Yeah, well, you know, she got another group that she's affiliated to that, you know, allows for her to be taken care of, you know, that gay group. You know, because she's a gay woman. You see what I'm saying? So, you know, her, you know, class agenda is more based on her homosexuality than it is on her blackness, bro. Anytime you get a homosexual, they go more towards their wretched freakiness than they do to their Africanness or their blackness or whatever you class you want to put them sickos in. But that's just the reality. You know, but nobody wants to deal with that or address it. Because if you look at our condition at this present time, in this country, the LGBT freaks have more power and say-so than black folks do. Now, we don't want to admit to it, you know what I mean, because that's a hell of a thing to admit to. But, you know, that last president, Puff the Magic Negro Obama, he basically showed it to you. I mean, if you really analyze and look at his record, when he dealt with races and classes, he did more for the freak nature ones than he did for black folks. I'm trying to see what he really did for black folks.
Now, Jay, let me mention something to you, because you mentioned about this Democratic Party, and I mentioned that it takes effort to keep white supremacy functioning. It takes a certain level of intelligence to come up with ways to act like you're helping people when you're really not. Now, the guy Roy Moore that won that seat down in Alabama, when he won, black folks put him in office. But you see the mechanism, the wheels start to turning. And when I say the wheels, they made sure that they drew a distinction when you say black folks put him in office. 98% of the women voted for 96%. And I think it was 92% men, something like that. As far as I'm concerned, black people put him in office. But they had to draw that distinction because this keeps their fires burning, the separation between black people, period, especially men and women. Now they're having this women's conference, women's political conference. I don't know when it is. I think it's soon.
It's going on right now in Las Vegas.
Okay. And it's black women there that is lobbying for more visibility for black women and coming up with some type of agenda for black women because they're the backbone of the Democratic Party. So herein again is a feminist, probably gay and lesbian agenda mixed in, but it's drawing a line of delineation and separation between black men and women. Like black women is going to get something from the Democratic Party that black people are not getting. Like they're a separate entity. But here it is, the game being played on black people again.
I think Richard pointed that out before. Here's that game being played and our people being willing participants in it. This country has been against black people since we've been here, both men and women, and black families. If black women have been the backbone of some of these black families for a number of years, how in the hell do black women in particular, or at least these black women that's out there in Las Vegas pushing for some type of agenda, how do they think that that's going to be any different than what it's been? You'll just get window dressing. But it's the same thing. You think you're doing something. It's almost like somebody on a treadmill or their legs is moving, but they ain't going anywhere.
But, you know, the thing is, in listening to that Johnson speech also, I mean, we're talking about 65, and they're saying black women there then was, you know, this is what the whole thing of, and it goes really back to E. Franklin Frazier, who did his study of the black family. But, you know, they were making the point that the separation of black women being the head of the black family and the denigration of black men and youth.
Mm-hmm.
So here we are in 2018, and as you say, they're talking about black women that bore into that they are. I mean, he laid out then that this was intentionally done.
Done, exactly.
But they're going to play it like, I mean, is that because they're absent of history? Is it because their political strategy is absent of being able to understand that the social factor of white supremacy placed the condition to where they can, the Democratic Party can be able to use them now?
That's exactly what I'm talking about. You put it in different words, but you nailed it, Richard. You nailed it. But some of our people are not picking up on it.
Good. Used from the beginning to the end. Their job is to use you for what you worth or what they perceive you to be worth. I mean, they study us constantly and continuously.
I agree with
you. I don't know, in all honesty, where blacks have a think tank studying them. Do you know one?
No. No, but you're absolutely right. They do study us, study our moves, and come up with not only
everything.
Counter moves, but counter the counter. They study
of
us.
Of course. Mm. They dictate how we should act and how we should respond and what this response should be. All of those things. And when we go off course, they do what they have to do to put us back on course. You know, you're dealing with a people who have to do these things in order to continue to have their position. And, you know, in all truthfulness, how could you really get mad at them? Honestly. How could you get mad at someone that's doing all of the necessary things to continue to have the power to do what? Survive. The sadness is that we as a people haven't figured it out. That we haven't put ourselves in a position to counter-react this beast. You know, it's like if black folks was given the opportunity to cut off the head of the Urugu, they would never do it. Because they feel as though it's inhumane to kill the beast. They feel that it's not the Sky Daddy's will. Now, how did you get to that point? You were trained. See, my whole thing is this. If you understand history, it's no way that you could ever see this Urugu as a human being, someone that has your best interests at heart. If you study history and you understand it, you know clearly what this man has done to you and your people. So by understanding that and understanding the absence of how the world is, your only real honest choice is to get rid of the beast. It's really all right as a people to get ready to be.
But first we have to deal with I'm projecting Jay and Elliot into the listening audience. Once we get centered in our own historical narrative, I would like to project that first we have to deal with the internal conflict that we've been fighting within ourselves, which has been longer than dealing with, as you say, the beast. And I'm just, what pops in my head is the narrative. We know now that the Hebrews in Egypt and the ancient Egyptians were both black. I don't think nobody, when Du Bois came along, he raised the question, while there was still study. But today, on both sides, we can say that those groups of people who were there were black people.
Mm-hmm.
And had conflict with each other. Okay, let's not even deal with that historical narrative. What about Nubia and Egypt? We can say that those two groups of people who had conflict, and how they dealt with the conflict can be, you know, still worked out. But we can say, compared to before, when we were on the assumption that they might have been white and black, we can say both of them are black. Now, look at our condition today and say, who do we have to deal with first? We have to deal with the question, and if we stay within our own historical narrative and resolve that, because we've been dealing with that conflict with each other, and what you show on the continent, you know, now through nation states, Sudan or Ghana, which we can go to the 1500s with the Angolas and the Congo. The Congo, they sent representatives to Europe in 1600. Angola fought the Portuguese in 1600. So the question is, are we centered first and dealing with first things first compared to looking outside? And I agree, because this 500 years is a short walk compared to when we're talking about possibly 8,000 years, 10,000 years. And we've had to deal with, create ways of dealing with each other to where we don't have to annihilate, steal. I mean, that's what those values were to do. This is how you need to call it the Ma'at, right? These are the values, how we need to relate with each other. Isn't those values on the basis of how we might have to deal with our political negotiation with the different ones who are just like us when we're in the same land?
It means nothing as long as you see your God is white.
And
I don't care what you say and what you think. As long as you see your God is white, you ain't never gonna be liberated in this society.
You know,
whenever you get the opportunity or the chance to liberate yourself and do what you have to do to take yourself out of the hands of the Sky Daddy, you'll never do it. You'll never do it. That's just the blatant reality of our situation. As long as we see this Urugu as our God, we will always be in the position of being an oppressed people, because we'll never stand up to them.
You know, let me say this, Richard, because it kind of goes to what you just mentioned, and we've talked about it before, when you said we have to deal with our internal struggle. I believe if we deal with the internal struggle as you framed it, we don't have to worry about what this guy's doing.
Right.
The internal struggle is similar to what happened in Haiti.
Mm.
And it's something that we didn't do here. They knew before they could mount any freedom push that they first had to deal with the collaborator, the people that would sabotage any efforts towards freedom. And they did that.
Hey, Elliot, can I ask
you? Wait a minute. Hold it. Let me finish. Now, we look at some of the struggles that our people here had, whether you're talking about Denmark Vesey, Nat Turner, and the mistakes they made because they thought they were dealing with, and even Gabriel Prosser, they thought they were dealing with the collaborator, but they wasn't effective because those efforts were thwarted by a collaborator. The only one, and I'm no historian, but just looking at it from the smaller level, the only one who effectively dealt with the collaborator, in my eyes, was Harriet Tubman. Even on the level she was working, she had a gun and said, if anybody gonna turn back, you ain't gonna make it. I'm gonna kill you. It ain't gonna be no turning back. She knew if somebody turned back that she probably wouldn't have made it out of there. That head, that money that they had on her head, somebody would have collected it. And she knew that it was people out there that looked like her that would have been willing to collect. Well, they wouldn't have collected on no whole bounty. They might have got a little extra fat back on the plantation and maybe a couple of dollars. They wasn't going to get that bounty that was on her head. But I'm just saying, that was her way of dealing with the collaborator. If you're with me and you decide to turn back, well, this is what's waiting for you. That gun that she had, 45, whatever she was carrying, she wasn't going to let nobody turn back. That's how she dealt with the collaborator. Well, listen. Looking at our historical perspective now, the collaborator is what was talked about earlier in the program. And they put themselves directly in the crosshairs. When you're talking about a black politician, and I'm not saying all, I'm talking about in general. When you're talking about a black politician or a black clergy, they put themselves in the position of being collaborators. If anything starts in the community, any dissidents, any rumblings of what they consider anarchy, the first thing the system calls on is the clergy and the black politicians. They're the ones that's supposed to keep a lid on things. They're the first line collaborators that our people got to come up with ways to deal with. We do. And any freedom push, we're going to have to come up with a way. That's why these think tanks are important. You know, I ain't advocating to put nobody. Listen, we seen what happened in South Africa when they came up with the necklace for people that was collaborators.
Beautiful thing.
I'm not advocating that, especially on the air. I am advocating that
I didn't advocate it.
I'm not saying that you did.
It was a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I'm not saying that you did. But all I'm saying is that whatever it is, we got to come up with a way to deal with that, or we won't be successful in pushing for some type of freedom struggle. Now, I know we're going to be successful because there's going to be ways that we're going to come up with dealing with it. But all I'm saying is right now, to tie in what Richard was saying, we got to come up with ways to deal with that internal struggle. And that internal struggle has, especially of recent history, when I say recent history, over the past 300 or 400 years, have been with the collaborator.
And look what has going to happen. Look what's going to happen if we're positioned that we as black men, forgetting the others, Jay, but we as black men are going to have to deal with the political force of black women. Now, I hear men already complaining about black women from the economic, and that's from the job position. Here they're saying, they're projecting, I don't know how true that is, but they're going to project to us that the political powerhouse that's going to be the negotiating positioners in relationship to the scarcity of political resource is going to be black women and the black men who are getting out of prison and who are underskilled. And this underskilled has been going on, it's been going on in a recent history since the 60s.
Yeah, but they're always going to have to keep us pitted against one another. They're always going to have to keep men, black men and black women pitted against one another. That's how they able, in all honesty, in a sense, to control us.
Yes, exactly. You know? Exactly.
That's what they do. That's why, you know, if you notice how they basically systematically done destroyed the black family. You know what I mean? And it continues because of the relationship between black men and black women. You know, we can't, for some reason, get it together. You know what I mean? You know, that's why sometimes I ask myself, what do the Negro want? What do we as a people want? What do men want? What do women want? What is the future? You know what I mean? What direction are we going? I mean, you know, just look at the mass confusion of a society where we allow the society at this time to have a dumbass like this clown that's in office leading it. And you're supposed to be the most advanced nation in the world and the leader of the free world, but everybody around the world is laughing at you because you got this dumb son of a bitch in office.
And remember,
basically just wrecking simple, stupid havoc. I mean, he don't even know how to govern. You know what I'm saying? And the sad thing is, he doesn't even have the ability to listen to others that be trying to school him. But this is what the Yoruba wants. And that's why I don't have no problem whatsoever if the government shut down. I care less. Don't bother me one iota. Because it's their thing. So get your thing together. You know, it's like I've started to listen to a little bit of the media, and I've noticed something that's been going on a little bit lately. White folks are starting to talk about other white folks in regards to how they're allowing themselves to be used and abused by this cracker. How they can't believe how other white folks are allowing him to hurt them. And they don't even realize that he's hurting them. You know what I mean? But I always tell people it's because they don't care. As long as you got your foot on my neck or some other person in the color's neck. I mean, it just goes to show, if you look at the media and the whole, you know, contradiction that's going on in regards to who's supposed to lead us. Because I don't care what nobody says about this whole immigration wall and all of this nonsense. Yo, Barack Obama deported more damn people than I think Trump will. It's just more of a thing now because of the blatant racism of Trump. But, I mean, think about it. Obama was deporting a lot of people, man. A lot of people were getting deported. It just wasn't widely out in the public the way it is now because of this cracker and his behavior. But yo, I mean, I was looking at the news the other day, man, and I saw that you know, thing that they was talking about, I don't know if y'all saw it, the Mexican that they sent back, man, with his wife and his two kids, man. And I even felt a slight, you know, hurt for the dude. You've been there for 30 years, you've been paying taxes, you ain't caused no problems, you got a wife, you got two kids, you're doing everything right, and you're gonna go and deport him? But then you got these M13 characters who are some of the most deadliest murderers in the world here. You're not deporting them. And you, on top of that, are arresting them putting them in jail and spending $30,000-$40,000 a year on them. But here it is, this man was here doing the right thing. And I mean, I have issues with little things like that, because in all actuality, he wasn't hurting nobody. He the type of person that should be able to stay in the country. Why are you removing him from the country? He doing all of the right things. But, we worried about him calling, Haiti a shithole country and Africa and all that. But have you noticed anybody really honestly in the media talk about the narrative why those places are the way they are? Have you heard anybody in the media break it down really? How because of the way they've been colonized and oppressed and manipulated their economy and all of those things? Do you ever hear anybody in the media really explain why Haiti is a shithole nation?
No, they'll put the blame directly on them. Yeah.
Yeah, but these are the things that we as a people don't even have anything in place anymore, Richard, in regards to honest media to show the contradictions. So if you can't show the contradiction and educate people, then how do you expect people to really understand what's going on? But that's just the way it is, and it's unfortunate because, I'm like, it's amazing how our intellect and our cultural understanding of who and what we are as a people is so honestly lacking. I mean, I'm still trying to get over my niece not knowing who the hell James Baldwin is at 18 years old in the college freshman. That's crazy to me. That's crazy to me. Now, when I check her mom and her daddy about it, now they're going to be bad. But I'm not going to do it that way. I'm going to do it another way. I think I'm going to have to work with a younger sister and make sure she know who James Baldwin is and some of our other literary people is. So now I got to spend some money I wasn't planning on to send her a couple of books. You know what I mean? But I'll do it because, it's not a good feeling to listen to some 18-year-old freshman black woman not even know who the hell Sonia Sanchez is, Nikki Giovanni, Baldwin. And I'm not even a real poetry guy. But I understand the significance of who they are in history.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It's just like you don't know who Amiri Baraka is, or even now go better, Leroy Jones. You know what I mean? Now, if you don't know who he is, and his son is the mayor in a state that you in a great deal of time, is the mayor of a city in a state that you in a great deal of time, that says a lot. But we got a lot of people like that. But we gotta figure out how we gonna wake them up. You know what I mean? Because this thing, and everybody get mad when I say it, this thing ain't getting no better for us.
Yeah.
How is this getting better for us? How is our position as Africans? I'm not talking about this Negro peeing and the Negro. How is our position as Africans getting better? Who's accepting what we trying to put forward culturally? Who's trying to define themselves as an African? Negroes are trying to define themselves as an American. Why the hell would you want to define yourself as an American based on the history that they've shown to not only to you as your enslaver, but to people around the world? What makes America such a proud nation? It's just like the contradiction with Russia. They dogging Russia about messing our so-called election and this and that and that and this. But if I'm not mistaken, don't we, as the so-called America, do the same thing with the CIA all around the globe? The same exact thing that they're accusing the Russians of doing? Now, have you heard anybody put forward that part of the agenda? I haven't heard nobody say it. And if somebody did say it, what would they do? They'll classify you as what? A non-American, right? But isn't it the truth, though?
Hey, they had a big thing when the NSA was came out and they had the whole, under Obama had to deal with the whole question about the FISA court and whether, you know, who could they be able to present the information of who the NSA was tapping and the heads of state of Germany and France, you know, because it came out that their phones were being tapped. But at the same time, as you're saying, they're bringing up right now that they're passing or redefining and talking about taking the FISA court, the little restriction they did put on it. They're talking about moving that back because they want to make sure that the ability to spy on or to listen on other people, and I think that's what's tied to this net neutrality, that they still have the ability to do that. I mean, that's why, what's that boy over there in Russia now? That's why he there in a room. Can't come out.
Oh, you talking about Snowden?
Yeah. I mean, that's the only way we knew how deep this was, that every phone in America and every phone in those foreign countries were tapped, and how that Google and Apple, and it was an AT&T, Verizon. They were tied to those databases.
Complicit in the whole yeah. thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. I mean that's not shocking. That's not shocking at all. I mean, you know, man, the reality is we live in a society that is as wicked as they come. They wouldn't be able to have the power that they have in the world. They wouldn't be able to do the things that they do if they wasn't as wicked as they are. The bottom line is, you know, why do I, or why should I think I have a stake in this empire? Why should I want to have a stake in something so wicked? The sad thing is, most of our people are running more into whiteness than they into Africanness. How are we going to figure out how we're going to unite our people to understand that this Urugu is our perpetual enemy and that he has nothing good for us? Okay, you got a job. Okay, you got a car. You got all of these things. But in reality, you're still a nigg. Didn't you just see what the white girl at the University of Alabama did? Mm. She went on the internet and started saying the N-word like it was rolling off her tongue, like most of the things she put in her mouth. You know what I mean? So, but, okay, so what did they do? They kicked her out of the sorority, and they kicked her out of college. Now, all of this will die down. You don't think come September of this year she'll be in another college?
Oh, certainly. Yeah, certainly. She might not have to wait till September.
You don't think that she'll pledge to another sorority? You don't think that if she play her cards right and she really do a thing, she may not be able to get some money out of it? And then it'll all be forgotten, and she'll go on in life and be in a position as an undercover racist that she will be to oppress black folks. Because you know she'll get a job. You know she'll get a position. You know what I mean? But here it is. We as black folks, if we did the same thing, we basically banned for life. But look, brothers, as always, you know, y'all the best radio show in the land, man. And Richard is, you know, the man. Because Richard got another 2 days off before he got to go back to his daddy. And he's going to chill, you know what I mean? And then he's going to go back to his daddy. I'm trying to get you to retire, Richard.
I'm trying to get
you know what I mean?
Believe me, brother.
You gotta retire, too. Man. You know, like Elliot. You know, Elliot, the only guy I probably know that go to work and sit in chair. When I found out that you had a shop, Elliot, you know what I thought about the movie Barbershop?
Oh yeah, okay.
And the character that what you call a play. Talking all the trash in the world, maybe cutting 2 hairs a day and just cool it out.
We'll talk to you later.
Have a good night, brother.
Take it down.
We'll be right back. Call the old Lord with us, and we'll be right back to you after the break.
Are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Hey, did y'all see the stuff I posted on my wall?
Nah, it didn't even show up in my news feed.
Man, I'm done with social media. All the injustice and brutality going around, and it's like they're trying to suppress our voice. We're trying to get the message out there, and you can't even share empowerment and what's going on around the country either.
Mm-mm. Nah, don't be dumb with social media, though. It's a tool, and there is a place where we have a voice. It's a Let's Buy Black 365 social network. You do anything you would on any other social network. Post pictures, videos, status updates, share resources and community news. But on Let's Buy Black 365, it's a platform for us and by us to tell our messages.
Whoa, that's like a digital underground railroad.
What's the name of that site again?
It's letsbuyblack365.com.
Yeah, I heard about that. It's all about networking, and you get points, right?
Yeah, the more you network, post, and share, the more points you get. Plus, you get points for posting pictures, sharing information, attending community events, and inviting others to network with you on the app.
Wow, that's all I need to know. I'm gonna go download that app right now.
Now, better yet, let me invite you so I can get some points. It's all about empowerment and solutions, y'all.
Yeah, that's what's up. I'm all in.
Let's do it. Let's share our stories.
Let's buy Black365.com.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
I come here tonight and plead with you. Believe in yourself and believe that you're somebody. As I said to the group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document can do this for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do this for us. No Kennisonian or Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do this for us. If the Negro is to be free, he must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with the pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own Emancipation Proclamation. let anybody take your manhood. Be proud of our heritage. As somebody said earlier tonight, we don't have anything to be ashamed of. Somebody told a lie one day. They couched it in language. They made everything black, ugly, and evil. Look in your dictionary and see the synonyms of the word black. There's always something degrading and low and sinister. Look at the word white. It's always something pure, high, and clean. But I want to get the language right tonight. I want to get the language so right that everybody here will cry out, yes, I'm black, I'm proud of it, I'm black and beautiful.
Today our people can see that we're faced with a government conspiracy. This government has failed us. The senators who are filibustering concerning your and my rights, that's the government. Don't say it, Southern senators. This is the government. This is a government filibuster. It's not a segregationist filibuster. It's a government filibuster. Any kind of activity that takes place on the floor of the Congress or the Senate, that's the government. So this government has failed us. The government itself has failed us. And the white liberals who have been posing as our friends have failed us. And once we see that all these other sources to which we've turned have failed, we stop turning to them and turn to ourselves. We need a self-help program, a do-it-yourself philosophy, a do-it-right-now philosophy. It's already too late philosophy. This is what you and I need to get with. And the only way we're going to solve our problem is with a self-help program. Before we can get a self-help program started, we have to have a self-help philosophy. Black nationalism is a self-help philosophy. What's so good about it? You can stay right in the church where you are and still take black nationalism as your philosophy.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and still got a little bit of time left, Brother Richard. Open forum this evening at 215-490-9832 is the contact numbers. Open forum. Let's go right back to the phones. 215, area code 215.
Hey, Brother Elliot. How you doing, my brother?
Hey, sir. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Hey, Brother Richard. How you feeling, my brother?
Not bad, but so.
Praise be. I don't even know where to begin. You know, Brother Elliot, when you played LBJ, the Southern Dixiecrat, as you called him, an hour or so ago, remember Brother Marcus had called him right after that, and Brother Marcus was saying how Lyndon Johnson was a hypocrite, and he was saying how he was sending young black boys to die in Vietnam, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you remember when I told you and Richard last week, I said, and you correctly said, Elliot, how Johnson was right what he was saying, because like you said, he knows who these, you know, white people are responsible for the conditions we're in. They created conditions and they maintain white supremacy, white domination. And I think I shared with you and Richard the other week, a week before last, I said that Eartha Kitt, our late great sister, I said that. And it was time that y'all would play that. I said, because when the other kid was invited to the White House, see, white folks have a habit, whether it be Republican or Democrat, they always like to invite a certain group of Negroes for the tea or the coffee, whatever. See, a lot of times they don't do their due diligence. They take all of us for granted. So when they invite her, the kids, they thought she was going to be like a happy Negro. You know how some of our people are. I had lunch with the president. I had tea with the president. So they think we are happy Negroes. They never dawns on some of these devils that when they invite our people, they might be inviting the conscious sister brother to the White House. You follow me so far?
Okay.
So when they invited Earthly Kit, they just thought that she was going to be a non-conscious nigga who just happened to be in the palatial house of the White House and all that stuff. So when Lady Bird Johnson, LBJ's wife, started running her mouth about how these black kids out of control, this and that, and the crime in the black community, you know, again, they just go to show you that was over 50-something years ago. Just when you think things change, you realize how much they remain the same. So when this devil was talking to artists, remember I told you before, the white woman, everybody talk about how bad the white man is, but like I say, the white woman is no joke either, because like I say, the white man comes out the wound of that white woman. And you know what I'm saying? So she just as bad as her female counterpart. Didn't brother Jay from New York a few minutes ago say about the white girl was using the N-word all over the place, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so like I say, she no different than her white male counterpart. Like I say, anyway, so that's where we always continue to make the mistake. We focus always on the white man, which is fine. I ain't got no problem focusing on the white male devil. But don't underestimate that white female devil, because like I say, that white male devil, he can't be on this earth unless he came out of the womb of that white woman. So don't ever lose sight of that fact, my brother. Don't ever lose sight of that. Well, anyway, So when Lady Bird Johnson kept talking all that stuff, Earthly Kit just jumped up there and said, "Well, look, you know, you're talking all that stuff, but you send these same black kids over there to die. You got them living in squalid conditions and stuff like that, and ghettos and stuff that white people created. But yet you're degrading these young black men and women, but you want to send them over there to die against people who never did nothing to them." And like I said, the Lady Bird Johnson and LBJ was outraged. They were shocked to hear this black woman, Earthly Kit, say that in the White House to them at this luncheon that they was having. So shock raised not only through the United States but around the world. So LBJ, like typical white man, you know, white devils turn red. You've seen them on Jobs, Rich and Elliot. When you say something they don't like, they be so upset they turn red. So he was so. No sooner than she made that comment, he went just like a white devil do. He went out of his way to try to destroy this sister's career. He went and got his he sicked the CIA on her, all kinds of security apparatus, the State Department, saying get something on her. This nigga done got her. She done got two big foot britches. How dare her? She's talked like that. How dare this Negro woman speak like that? Grow on her. Get something on her. Find something. If you can't get something on her, put something on her. I mean, he did all he could to try to destroy this woman. And for years, she couldn't get no work in the United States. No meaningful work, I mean. You know what I mean? Ellen Richard, so she had to, you know, go overseas in order to make a living. It wasn't until, like, years later, she was able to come back to the United States and able to, you know, resume her career and entertainment better. But Lyndon Johnson tried to destroy her because she dared to speak out against his racism and everything. And by the way, Lyndon Johnson was a Democrat the last time I heard, correct?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, so he's going to show you, like you was telling Brother Timothy, no difference between them devils. That's what Malcolm X was trying to tell our people, between Lyndon Johnson and Barry Goldwater. You had one devil with a Republican, and you had Lyndon Johnson, a Democrat. But it was still white men, and like I said, they all about maintaining white supremacy and everything. And by the way, Lyndon Johnson, for a check on history, he's sending young black men and women, especially young black men, that die in Vietnam. This was the same devil, too, by the way. And I know a lot of black people to this day give Lyndon Johnson credit for passing the Civil Rights Bill. But see, he did it out of necessity. You know what I mean? Not because he felt any love for black people. He was the modern day Abraham Lincoln, like Minister Farrakhan and other black leaders have said, Frederick Douglass and all of them. Abraham Lincoln didn't love black people. He helped free the slaves not because he loved black people, because he saw slavery was destroying the Union. He was trying to maintain the Union. If like the minister said, if keeping you a slave would have preserved the Union, then damn it, you would have stayed a slave. But he saw what slavery was doing to the Union. That's why Lincoln did it. He was about as racist as any other mother crackers has ever been. Make no mistake about it. Abraham Lincoln, who, again, our people get all this credit for. Well, same thing with LBJ. He passed the Civil Rights Bill not because he loved black people, because first of all, he was pressured, and because it was necessity. You know what I mean? Because he said the image that was going around the world about black people, you know, you're talking about communism in Russia and all these other places, and yet people around the world saying the films of black kids being shot down or with water hoses and all that kind of stuff just fought their peaceful protesting. So the imagery was stuff. So that imagery had a lot to do with Johnson passing, and that wasn't a great thing to civil rights bill, but he passed it only, again, out of necessity and stuff. And like I say, Lyndon Johnson was no friend of black people, but again, that's that misnomer that, you know, black people have that he was some kind of friend of black people. Lyndon Johnson was as racist as the rest of them devils and stuff like that. So you see clearly when you fast forward, like, and stuff now, you see, again, these same schemes and machinations being played on our people. You know, Trump, like you say, Trump, Clinton, Democrat, Republican, makes no difference. These devils about maintaining white supremacy and white domination and everything. They like you was telling Timothy, these people doing just what they're supposed to do and stuff like that. Like you said, Elliot, you don't see no strong white Democrats coming out against Donald Trump. The challenges he's been getting for a cause of impeachment of Al Green, Maxine Waters, Cedric Richmond, people like that, Nancy Pelosi, all them, they silent on and stuff on when they come to going after Trump. Oh, they make little criticism here and there, but and stuff. The little punk that we got from Philadelphia, Bob Brady, another one. Them devils ain't really calling for Trump's head on the platter. You know what I'm saying, Ellen Richard?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For real. They just playing games. So any kind of things coming to get calls for articles of impeachment is money coming from black. From black congressmen and stuff like that, or congresswomen, it's not coming from these white Democrats, it's the male or female, and we need to be clear on that and stuff, you know. So again, we just go to show you, like you said, Ellen Richard, we got the. If we ever gonna be free, and you played this segment by Dr. King just now, if black folks gonna be move forward in this country, we have to be done with our hands, not with white people, not with the Democrats. Party, Republican Party. If we, like I said, we vote, and it's always got to be strategic. Like I said many times, we vote and participate in this system. It's to our advantage, not because we trying to prop up the Democrat or Republican Party, but we have to find our own place in the society, a prop up our own political party. We're going to deal with the system like that. We have to have our own representatives in there, not just ones that just because they black, but ones that's conscious black men and women, the Cynthia McKinney's of the world. Like I said, the brother Roz Baraka, Brother Cho way down in Mississippi, people, like-minded people like that, they got our interest, people's interests at heart. If you're going to move forward in this political system, not just get a bunch of handkerchief and Negroes and Negresses in there, that's going to prop up the Republican Party, because that's not going to get us anywhere, you know. And speaking of that, Ellen, that leads into my segment about, and I'm sure you and Richard have heard this stuff about Oprah Winfrey, correct?
Yes.
Being a possible candidate for 2020.
Mm-hmm.
But see, again, I don't know if y'all heard the article, but Brother Umar Johnson, he had he was over in Asia speaking, he had a strong rebuke towards a possible Oprah presidency, and he said just what Brother Wesley Muhammad has said and others. He said Oprah presidency would be the further immaculation of the black male. You see what I'm saying? In other words, Brother Umar didn't bite his tongue. He said what would have happened, they'll use Oprah, the powers that be, to further feminize black men. You know what I mean? And, of course, he caught flack from it and stuff like that, but he told the truth and stuff, you know? And like he told the reporter, he said, it's not just Oprah per se. He said they'll use Oprah and they'll use her presidency to do so much dirt to black people and stuff, which they do. They're the same with Obama. You think these whiteys did dirt to black folks and people of color under Obama, they even do a doubly under Oprah Winfrey, Oprah Winfrey presence. They even do more. Because remember, you mentioned Afrikaan, Richard, during your dialogue. Well, Afrikaan was created under the Obama administration. You know what I mean? So these devils do all kinds of, besides the destabilization and immaculation and of black manhood, they'll do all kinds of other stuff to people of color around the world, black people in particular. You know what I mean? And then, of course, you had the silly Negroes that you see here on terrestrial radio, Elliot and Richard, the same silly Negroes that you heard back with Obama. You know, we put Obama and the Democrats first. What did Obama do? He put us last. He like Brother Jay said, he did everything. He did everything out of it. He went out of his way to help the LGBT, the Jews, Israel, all this stuff. But yet, when it comes to black people, stop crying. Put your bedrooms, take your bedroom slippers off, all that foolishness. He never talked to them white people like that. And you know that's the truth, Ellen and Richard. He never talked to degrading the white people like that, no matter what, whether it was gay or straight. But he talked to us, who voted from 98% strong, he talked to us with that kind of silly, juvenile language and stuff. And we accept that. He dropped more, Obama dropped more bombs on Africa than any president, white or white before him, more than Clinton, more than Reagan, more than them devils. He dropped more bombs and stuff. Help was behind the him and Hillary and Israel behind the killing of Brother Gaddafi and all this of the stabilization of Africa and stuff like that. But you have silly Negroes, like I say, that'll be up there talking about when they come to Oprah. Well, you know, Oprah can't be just the president of the black people. She got to be the president for everybody. You know, we'd be the one that go out and vote for 98% strong like we did for Obama. We put her first and she put us last. And niggas would be happy with it. You know what I mean? Then you sit back and complain about why your schools in Baltimore and Philadelphia, you got black children sitting in the damn classroom, in a cold-ass classroom with coats on. You know, we don't see the big picture, L.A. Richie. We don't see the after effects. We don't see how all this stuff is connected. Black kids sitting in schools across the inner cities of America with coats on in the dead winter time, or with no running water, or rotten ashy or water with rusty water coming out of the water fountains, if you will, and not having up to date textbooks. They don't see that's a direct a result of white racism, white supremacy, and stuff like that. And yet, Negroes don't pick up on that. You know what I mean? All this stuff is connected, Ellen Richie. You know what I mean? It's no accident. This stuff is done. It's done by design. You know? And yet, Negroes are sitting there throwing something. But we can't expect him to be president just for black people. I mean, we talk so damn stupid, some of us sometimes, man.
Well,
our people continue to suffer, you know?
That segment of the speech that Richie shared with me, Johnson himself said that the despair in the black community is directly linked to the indifference in learning.
Sure,
so,
it is.
You know,
no question about it. LBJ know because he went on them that helped perpetuate that kind of stuff again. He knows exactly what he was talking about. And by the way, for speaking of LBJ, he was the one too, Elliot, when you're talking about sending young black men to Vietnam to die, why they getting mistreated over in America, he helped further America's involvement in the Vietnam War, when he faked the answer with the Gulf of Tonkin, when he said that Vietnam had attacked an American warship, which was a lie, you know what I mean? It was a bold-faced lie to further get America in the Vietnam War, and look at all the lives that was cast, and especially here in Philadelphia, L.A. Mitchell. You know how many black men and Puerto Rican men died from Edison High School?
Mm-hmm.
More died from Edison High School handful than any other high school in the country. More young black and Puerto Rican men lost their lives on the basis of a lie. Don't that sound familiar? And by the way, Ellen Rich, in case y'all didn't notice, Lyndon was a Democrat, right? See how the game is played? Didn't George Bush do the same thing with the war in Iraq, the mass weapons of mass destruction? Remember, Ellen Rich, Saddam mm-hmm. had all these weapons of mass destruction, or we was told that he had, and what happened? You have young black men and women, even young white men and women, dying in Iraq and stuff like that on the basis of a lie. And many of these young black and white kids, young white men and women, and black men and women, Puerto Rican, Asian, whatever, the ones that did survive come back with no arms, Elliot and Richard, with no legs. Or if they came back at all, some got mental problems for life, you know what I mean, messed up mentally for life on the basis of a lie, about George Bush's lie. And again, George Bush was what? A Republican. Lyndon Johnson, who faked the Gulf of Tonkin yesterday, he was a Democrat. See what I'm saying, L.A. Richard?
Yeah.
And by the way, both of them happen to be from Texas. Do you see any irony in that? I'm just putting that out there. Not that it had mixed any difference, just ironic. Both of them from Texas, you know what I mean? One Republican, one Democrat, both from Texas. You know, I mean, so we see clearly these devils, brother, they got game with them and stuff like that. And I'm going to tell you something. When Donald Trump makes these idiotic comments like the shithole country, like you said, Ellie, it just shows, and I'm glad you played them comments that show how split the African leadership is. And like you said, Ellie, and as you see the same thing in America, how people are split when it comes to this devil and stuff. And so
they showcased it that all that week on CNN. They mm-hmm. had all that. Oh, they had a field day. They had panels with black folks that was upset. Then they had other panels with black folks. They ain't seen nothing wrong with it. I mean, they really showcased it to the world.
Of course. And that's how it always is with our people. You always get these handkerchief-headed Negroes that can sit up there with these devils. And see, Trump, like I say, Trump is no different than Rush Limbaugh. and the rest of them devils, when they say something hateful against black people, they always surround themselves with a bunch of Negroes. And Rush Limbaugh made them despicable comments about Don McNabb and all that other stuff years ago. He made sure he had a bunch of handkerchief Negroes around and said, oh, Rush is not prejudiced. He's a good man. You know, he's not racist and stuff like that. So that's the game white people play. They know they say that hateful stuff, bigoted stuff, and they just get a couple handkerchief Negroes, male and female, to surround them for energy, make them look good and stuff like that. But see, Donald Trump, again, he's a slick devil because, like I say, we all know Donald Trump. See, I don't know why black people act like they're so shocked that he would make them comments. This man has a history of being a bigot, you know? See, again, Ellie, you judge somebody on their history. Like I say, way before Trump became president, when him and his racist-ass father got sued by the Justice Department in the 70s for not renting apartments, not no Ricky Dink apartment. I'm talking about high-priced palatial apartments up in New York's upper Manhattan and stuff like that. High-priced apartments, not to some black thug, Elliot and Richard, but these were black professionals, man. I'm talking about black engineers, black lawyers, black doctors. Trump and his racist father wouldn't rent to these, but they got sued by the judge. They had to pay out millions of dollars in a class action suit. So this man has a history of being a bigot and stuff like that. Him and his father. Then you go back to the Central Park thing, again, up in New York, where those five black boys served time in jail for raping a white girl, and these boys was clearly innocent and stuff. And when it was proven that they was innocent, and Donald Trump, leading up to that, said these young black men were savages, animals. He did everything but call them the N-word. We know he called them the N-word, too, but he didn't say it publicly. But he said everything about these boys and stuff, and even when it was proven that these young men was innocent, he still had the audacity to sit there and say they were thugs and savages, and how dare to sit in New York, pay these young men millions. You know, these young men got millions of dollars. Money still is not going to make them whole again, because the only thing they can do is help them out financially. But these young men spent time in jail. Their innocence was taken away from them. You know what I mean? The youth was taken away from them for a crime they didn't commit, and stuck to his racist diatribe about how bad these young men were. So again, we see clearly that Donald Trump is no damn good. He's been a racist then, and he's a racist now. So his comments wouldn't shock me that he made those comments about Africa, because he's a bigot, and that's what he is. But see, we understand what Donald Trump is doing. See, he's the master of deception. See, while everybody focuses on his racist remarks and his racist actions, this man is there. He had 49 federal judges, Elliot and Richard. You know, he appointed them, and they got confirmed, I think, by the Senate. And he got the Supreme Court judge. And just like the Supreme Court, these federal judges, Elliot and Richard, these are appointments for life. You see what I'm saying? For life. And you know they're going to help institute his racist policies and stuff like that. You know what I mean? So long after that devil leave office, whether it's after 3 years, 4 years, or even if you get impeached before the 4 years, them devils that he got confirmed through the Senate, they're going to be federal judges for life. And you know they're racist bigots to the max. So what do that mean, Brother Ellie and Richard? That mean them judges, that federal judge that Trump appointed, them devils going to help institute laws and stuff and stuff that could further hurt people of color, especially black folks. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, certainly.
So make no mistake about that. So while we focus on that dumb stuff he said of his ignorant ass mouth, he's quietly behind the scenes getting all these bigots and these high court positions that further hurt black people and stuff like that. We definitely got to, you know, can't lose sight of that, because we see where clearly where this devil coming from. And again, like you said, like you told Brother Timothy so correctly, Brother Elliot, hey, do you think the Democrats really trying to help out? So meeting with them, that ain't no bargain and stuff like that. Because like I say, because they think just like their white Republican brothers and sisters, they all about, at the end of the day, they might have a little inner squabbles here and there, call each other's names. But at the end of the day, they're about maintaining white supremacy and white domination, not only in America, but throughout the world. And Elliot, I'm going to close with this remark. As you know, Brother Elliot, Brother Troy Wilmore comes on tomorrow with SST, right?
Mm-hmm.
I will make sure I call Trump, and I'm putting this out there for everybody that's listening to Calvin Awaken. If y'all get a chance, football fans, sports fans, get a chance, call Brother Troy tomorrow at the same number, 215-490-9832, and get your comments on the upcoming playoffs and stuff. They support Brother Troy. He's a good brother. But I will say this in closing, Brother Elliot. I hope you and Richard, because y'all show going to be on during the time when the Eagles play around, because they're thinking off at 6:40. I hope, Brother Ellen Richard, y'all guys got some sympathy in y'all heart and y'all some compassionate brothers, because I hope y'all consider contingent to guard the Ben Franklin Bridge. And the reason why I say that, Brother Ellie Richie, because if the Eagles lose, these white folks and maybe some Negroes too, they're going to jump off that bridge, man. they're going to jump off that bridge. I'm telling you, all this hype and they done put so much heart and soul into it. The Eagles lose that game, which they probably will, because now, I'm going to tell you about these white folks. See, Vegas is not dumb. They don't get it wrong. And they was wrong last week. They said that the Eagles was going to lose to Atlanta, and Atlanta lost. Eagles beat Atlanta. Now, not to say the Eagles can't win, but on any Sunday, anything can happen. But if Vegas is not in the business to make money, usually they get it right. It's the reason why they got Minnesota favored by 3 this weekend. So I say it again: if you better have a contingent by that Ben Franklin Bridge, because they lose, brother, these white folks gonna be jumping, gonna commit mass suicide. They'll be jumping into that cold icy water Sunday night around 10 o'clock during the time you and Rich is still on. So they had better win, because it's gonna be some mass crime and suicide in this city Sunday night, my brother. So close with that remark, okay, brother? I had to lighten up just a little bit on the way out the door, okay, Ellie Richard?
Yeah, well, they can have at it.
Wait, Ellie, you ain't going to try to stop them?
No.
I know that's right. But, yeah, let's put that in there real quick. But, yeah, but they're going to show you, like I'm going to say, sport and play, how white folks take sport and play. So they'll put so many. I heard a white guy say on the radio the other day, he said he had mortgages he had to finance his house just to get Super Bowl tickets in case they make it to the Bowl. I'm saying, you got to be out of your damn. Ain't that much football game in the world, man. See, these people, they put so much heart and so much in sport and play, man. And I'm saying to myself, it's a game. Them guys are going to, whether they lose or win Sunday night, the Eagles or Minnesota, them guys can get nice big paychecks, win or lose, man. I mean, if you're a fan of these same teams, root for them, but keep it in perspective, man. At the end of the day, them guys can get nice fat checks. When they put a check, say, pay to the order of Joe Dennis or pay to the order of Richard or Elliot or whatever, then I'll be put that my stock and investment in it. But until that time, until they start writing me out a check in my name, it's not that deep. You know what I mean, Elliot Richard is not that deep. But for these people, and even some of our black folks, Elliot Richard, they can get so caught up in it like that. So they'll be jumping up on the bridge for these white folks if the Eagles lose. They'll be ready to jump off the bridge with them as well. So, you know. But anyway, man, y'all, like Brother Jay said, y'all brothers keep the good work, man. I'm going to sit back and listen to the rest of the remainder of y'all show, and I'll catch y'all brothers on Sunday. And like I said, man, if anybody listening to the show tonight, call Brother Trey Wilmore up tomorrow, man, and get your little picks and comments on the games and stuff, man.
You know, before you go, Joe.
Yes, Elliot. Uh-huh.
I guess I know you'll probably call Brother Troy tomorrow. You know, mm-hmm. they put out a AP report that this year. And they've never done it before. This year, for the credentials, the press credentials at the Super Bowl, they mm-hmm. want to know the people's nationality. They want to know whether they're black. You know, they want to know what they are. And they have never done this before. So, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, that just shows.
I didn't know that, Elliot. Thanks for making me aware of that. I didn't even know that, Elliot. Thanks for letting me know about that.
Yeah, let me, in fact, if I can pull it up, I'll just share with you while you
okay,
with
sure.
us here. Hold on a second. Mm-hmm. Give me one sec. Bear with me here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's came out 2 days ago. The NFL is requiring journalists covering the Super Bowl in Minneapolis to provide racial identification and requesting credentials to be admitted to the February 4th game. Journalists for years have been asked to provide either Social Security number or passport number or photo for FBI security checks for the game, but have not been asked to specify their race. A field that is mandatory on the online press application form. A field that is not mandatory on the online press application forms. The NFL until this year conducted security checks on media members on its own, while the FBI performed checks on their credentialed personnel, such as vendors or stadium attendants. League spokesperson Bryant McCarthy told the Washington Post, for this year's game, the FBI asked For this year's game, the league asked the FBI to perform security checks on all credentialed personnel, including media. McCarthy said the NFL Security Department, which controls the composition of the application form, attempted to make the press credential process consistent with checks that are done for others who receive working credentials, which includes requesting their racial identity. So,
hey, Alex, can I ask you a question, Brother Elliot?
Mm-hmm.
And Brother Richard, would it be a stretch to say that the black sports writers or sports journalists, if you will, they're going to be held to extra scrutiny?
Oh, certainly. Certainly.
Okay. Yeah. Just thought I slipped that in there. So whether they black males or black females, I'm sure they can be held to a little tighter scrutiny than their white counterparts. I'm quite sure. Unbelievable. But see, again, it's like the Honorable Mr. Farrakhan said on a tape I heard years ago. See, when you see all this is double down on security apparatus, homeless security, Trump want to build a wall, all this paranoia. See, again, it comes down to this, Brother Elliot. If you wasn't so damn rotten around the world, you didn't go around on your damn dirt killing people of color, dropping drones and going over and destabilizing other people, doing all that killing their resources, you wouldn't be living in fear like that. You know what I'm saying, Brother Elliot? You wouldn't live in fear. But these white folks do so much rotten stuff around the world. This is why they're paranoid. That's why you see these devils always talking about these immigrants coming over here because you got American soldiers right now as we speak in some African or Muslim country mistreating their women, trying to either raping their women or sexually. I'm doing some despicable act.
Yeah, you're breaking up, Joe.
I'm sorry, Mr. Elliot. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
They're doing some despicable act over there and stuff like that. And this is the kind of blowback they get when these people, and this is the kind of fear they had there's going to be a blowback. These people come over here and do to them what they been doing to people around the world on a regular basis. Like Elijah Muhammad, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, a devil does what a devil does. He said straight up, he said, a devil do to you what he don't want done to him. In other words, white folks don't want you to rape their women. They don't want you to mistreat them, take their but it's okay for them to do it to everybody else. See, if you don't want it done to you, then damn it, don't do it to other people. You know what I'm saying, Ellen Richard? But see, that's why these devils double down so much on the security thing, because they are living in because they know all the rotten stuff they do to black and people of color around the world. That's something.
Thanks for your call, Jim.
Thanks, Brother Elliot. Thanks, Brother Richard.
Peace. Yeah, they asked for security to specify their race at these games, Richard. Ain't no blacks going around planting no bombs and all this other stuff. It's these white folks, these white terrorists that's been doing all that type of stuff. So they better scrutinize them, check on those vendors and all those white ones. They were worried about the African Americans getting press credentials. If I was them and I'd had to put my name down there saying I'm black, I said, listen, let somebody else cover that darn name.
Mm-hmm.
Don't mean that much to me, but you ain't gonna shoot. You ain't see them blacks can't wait to get to watch that foolishness or to be a part of covering that foolishness, sport and play. Yeah. Well, after it's over, what does it really mean?
There you go.
Listen, I want to thank everybody for being with us this evening. Before we leave, Brother Caller Joe, I feel like it took the words out of my mouth. Tune in to talk to a conscious brother and a good brother, SST, tomorrow at 10 to 12 noon. SST with Troy Wilmore will be on. So give him a call tomorrow at 215-490-9832. Knows everything that you want to know about all types of competition. Just give him a call. SST tomorrow, Saturday Sports Talk with Brother Troy Wilmore. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Sunday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school,
soon. I have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Such a small part of the things that they'll soon be right at the heart of. My little Tommy, he said he wants to be a fireman.
Children, to save the children.